Hey everyone, welcome to the Balanced Dietitian podcast. I am your host, Marie-Pierre, and for all my English friends out there, you can call me Marie. I am a registered dietitian with a background in psychology. My passion in life is to help individuals heal their relationship with food and their bodies. If you're tired of dieting and tired of restriction, you are at the right place. I'm hoping that this podcast will help and support you as you heal your own relationship with food and your body, and give you the tools, the resources, and the knowledge that you need to finally ditch the diets. Every week, you will be hearing from guest experts and myself on all things food, body, and mind. I am so happy that you're here, and I cannot wait to support you on your journey. Let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome to the Balanced Dietitian podcast. I hope you are doing well today. Today we are going to be talking about exercise, and more specifically, healing our relationship to exercise, to movement, and how we do that when we are in the midst of diet culture. So today I have Jess Brox-Pitt, who is a certified personal trainer and group fitness instructor, who is going to come talk to us about movement. So Jess is the founder and owner of Enlightened Well LLC, a virtual fitness and wellness studio. She has a background in social working. She is a mom, a power lifter, a gym class dropout turned into personal trainer. So she began her fitness journey with, you know, wanting to lose weight, as all of us do, or a lot of us do, and then quickly transition into a health at every size perspective and really enjoying movement. She's discovered intuitive eating and just found ways to move that ways that felt just enjoyable for her body, right? Not coming from this place of shame. So Jess has a lot to share on this subject, and I cannot wait for you to listen. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Balanced Dietitian podcast. Today we have Jess here with us. I'm so excited that you're on. Hi, Jess.
Hey, how's it going? It's great to meet you and to be a guest on your podcast.
Yeah, it's super fun because we get to meet the first time here live on the podcast and connect and talk about all these juicy things that we want to talk about today.
Yes.
I am so excited for you to be here. So before we get started into the subject, so today we want to talk about movement. We want to talk about health at every size. We want to talk about how to enjoy movement without being, you know, restrictive and like shitty about it. Let's talk about you. Tell us a little bit about you, your story, how you got to where you are today.
Sure. So my name is Jess. I am currently a certified personal trainer. I am a certified Girls Gone Strong Level 1 coach and a group fitness instructor. I started out, so as a youth, I was in no way sporty or athletic at all. I actually failed gym class when I was in high school. And then in my younger adulthood, I kind of got, you know, I felt like I needed to do something. And I think that it started out partly as like weight management, but also like I just wanted to kind of feel healthier, you know, whatever. So the first thing, kind of sport thing that I did, I signed up for a triathlon. Because go big or go
like, home. All or nothing. Let's go.
So this is going back to, gosh, like, I guess like early mid 2000s. And so I came home to my husband, who wasn't yet my husband. And I was like, hey, I think I want to sign up for a triathlon. And he was like, but you don't like swim. And he's like, and like, you can bike, but you don't bike like that bike. And you don't really run either. And I was like, but I think I can do this and I'm going to do it. And I had a pretty long time to train. So, you know, I would not recommend just on a whim signing up for a triathlon in like a month or two. But if you've got time to train and you at least know how to swim and how to ride a bicycle, Given enough time, you can probably train for a sprint distance. So that was what I did. So I trained to a sprint distance try. I finished the race. It was probably like the biggest kind of sporty accomplishment that I had made in my life. And I think I got kind of like hooked on that finish line feeling, you know, that feeling of like I worked my butt off to accomplish this thing at this big crazy goal that nobody would have expected from me, and like I did it. And so I spent the next couple of years doing like the odd kind of road race and some other triathlons, and then I got pregnant. Got married and got pregnant. And I really thought that I would continue to train through my pregnancy, but I had morning sickness that was like so bad. I remember waking up planning to go for like a morning run, and I would get up and get my running clothes on and then throw up and be like, screw this, and fall back asleep on the sofa instead. And, you know, I think at the time I kind of struggled with feeling like I was like giving up on my workouts. But it looking back on it, like I was doing what my body needed to at the time, you know, and it not to like get too far ahead of myself, but it makes me a little bit sad now to look back on that time and think about like how hard I was on myself. It's like I was growing a human. Your body needs a lot of rest to do that. So anyway, the next couple of years, you know, I had my first son and then my second son, and both of my births were not easy. I had one was by C-section, the second was vaginal, but I had a difficult birth with the second kid. Like I ended up needing surgery later. That's a whole other very long story. But it's not like with either kid that I was the woman who was like back out working out 2 weeks later. Like I couldn't even really walk 2 weeks later either time. So it took a while just for my body to like physically heal and recover enough to be able to get back to any type of movement. And again, like I look back at that time and think about how, I mean, it's frustrating just to be like physically limited, but I think about how hard I was on myself about it. And it's like, it's just a bummer. It's a bummer that we have that much pressure on us, especially like around that, kind of prenatal and postpartum time. So eventually, my kids, just for reference, are 8 and 11 now. So like a couple of years out of all of that. Eventually, I got back into running, went through, I was doing like a lot of trail running for a while. And during those years, sort of after both my kids were born and I got into mostly running, I got really a little bit obsessed about my weight and about trying to like control my weight and just get smaller. I tried a number of different things, you know, ranging from kind of restrictive meal plans or other forms of restriction, you know. Even going into like kind of shake or supplement things to try to drop weight. And, you know, throughout that time, like I was obviously very active, but my relationship with movement got at times very disordered, where I was compensating for what I was eating with workouts, or you know, sometimes working out like 2 or up to 3 times a day sometimes, you know, and would get really kind of fixated on like if I missed a workout, feeling like I needed to find a way to like fit it in elsewhere later in the week, you know, and just a lot of habits that were not very healthy, and then becoming like very obsessed about it, about my weight, about what I was eating, about what my workouts were. And eventually what happened was that I was finding myself having these binges that felt very out of control. And before getting into fitness, I worked in the mental health field. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. And if you know any licensed clinical social workers, our favorite pastime is to diagnose ourselves and our loved ones with stuff. So I like low-key diagnosed myself with binge eating disorder. And in retrospect, like, I don't know that I don't know. I was not in a good place. I can say that for sure. So I really had this thought that, like, if I could stop the binge eating, that then I would be able to, like, lose the weight and, like, have my weight all sorted out. So I started to research treatments for binge eating. And eventually I came across a book about, you know, how to stop binge eating. And in the book, she talked about intuitive eating. And one of the first kind of exercises that she like had that I did out of that book was to make a list of everything that I had ever tried in an effort to lose weight, kind of how it worked, both short and longer term, and what did it cost me? And what did it cost me in terms of, you know, money, but also in terms of time, like mental energy and effort. And to be honest, up to that point, I did not even realize how many different things that I had tried throughout my life to lose weight. Like I really had been like a chronic dieter. And it really wasn't until I wrote them all down on one piece of paper together that I was like, holy crap, I can't believe I've tried this many different things, you know? After reading that book, you know, obviously the next step was to pick up the original intuitive eating book. And it really, as soon as I started implementing that stuff in my life, it really changed, obviously, my relationship with food, how I ate. It changed how I think about my body. And also over time, it really changed my relationship with movement. So it, you know, it took a bit of time. And I was already like, I was kind of in the middle of the process of becoming a certified personal trainer when I came upon intuitive eating. So it definitely created a lot of change in just how I approach movement. And so then my work as a personal trainer has kind of grown with me already in this intuitive eating and health at every size kind of mindset.
Thank you. I'm just like nodding my head because I can just imagine people listening to this and being like, I resonate with everything that you've said, right? Because it's such a weird thing when our relationship to food and our body becomes very much disorder, but we don't necessarily realize it because it's also very much normalized until you do something or there's this light bulb moment, or for you, that time that you kind of wrote everything down, you're like, oh, wow, like, look at all this time and energy spent on this. What if it could be different? Like, it's such a cool transition that you were able to do. So thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Also, yeah. Love how you went from like, I don't love sports, I'm going to do a triathlon.
Yeah. Go big or go home.
Yeah, exactly. So I think this like leads us really well into our conversation today, because I think oftentimes, anyways, with my audience and what I do as a registered dietitian, we often talk about food and body all the time. Healing your relationship to food, reconnecting with our body. But sometimes we kind of forget about the piece of movement, which is also a really big piece and is often all intertwined with our own relationship to food and to our body. And is it like a means to control and a means to, yeah, I think control is the good word that can, yeah. Can be there. So can you tell us a little bit more how like diet culture and maybe our relationship to food and our body can also impact then our relationship to movement?
So I think A lot of people approach movement as primarily a way to control or to change their weight. To be honest, I feel like that's one of the things that bums me out. I'm not going to say the most, but bums me out a lot about diet culture is that when we focus solely on weight and weight management as a sort of benefit or a side effect of movement, that folks sort of get disconnected from all of the other benefits of movement. So there's, the mood boosting benefits, sleeping better, bone density, it helps improve your insulin and glucose management systems, improves heart health, lung health, like name a system of your body, it is improved through a regular movement routine. And so I think when we really entwine movement with weight, people will start a movement routine. They'll experience some of those other benefits, but their weight may not change at all or might not change as much as they would like. They come to the conclusion, well, it's not working. And then they bag it. I also think that there's a lot of like culture around movement where like it needs to be like super hardcore, super intense, and like almost like sadistic. I don't know. And if you like to go hard, and some people really do just like to go hard, if you like to go hard, like go hard. Nobody's saying don't. But if you don't love that, there's still a ton of benefit from, moderate intensity cardio or like lifting weights that you don't need to be, trying to deadlift hundreds of pounds. You can do tons of stuff with dumbbells that are relatively light and still build overall muscle and strength that's going to have benefit.
Yeah, no, and that makes a lot of sense. And it's this idea that I think in my head anyways, it all comes from this idea of like calories in versus calories out. And a way to control is, well, if you've done everything you could with the calories in with food, then we're like, cool, calories out. How can I burn calories and do all these like, what are the calls? There's like movements that are like metabolism boosting exercises or like
Right.
fat burner exercises. And all these
Right.
things that we hear from diet culture, that it's like it's just another way to control. What I like that you said is like how it actually impairs our long-term relationship to movement, because studies show time and time again that if the prime motivator for movement is weight loss, that is not sustainable. Right. And exactly for what you said, if you don't have the weight loss you want, if it's you don't have weight loss at all, you stop the exercise because the motivator was weight loss and you're not getting that. So although you're getting all these other health benefits, it's like not enough because we're like, but weight loss though, right? So it really does impair that relationship because we're like, it has to be a certain way.
And I think the other thing that can happen is people, I mean, I know this certainly happened to me, but get into sort of weird ideas about what counts and what doesn't count as like movement or exercise. And so things like it doesn't count because I didn't like break enough of a sweat, or it doesn't count because it didn't occur like in a gym, or or weird kind of rules or ideas about like how long a workout has to be to like count. And I think increasingly we're seeing that like there's a ton of benefit to even smaller bouts of movement throughout a day. So it doesn't need to be a 1 hour workout in the morning at the gym. And that's not like the only way to move that counts. You can break it up into smaller chunks, maybe through the day. Or, I did a, I worked with the kids at my son's scout camp on a fitness merit badge. And so I went in, and this is a little bit mean, it was a total trick question. I was like, what's the best kind of a workout plan? And so they're coming up with like, these different, like one that is like total body, or different ideas that they had. And I'm like, the best kind of workout plan is the one that you will actually do. So if you will actually do 4 15-minute workouts a week, and that's like the most that you can reasonably do right now, then that's the best workout plan for you right now. 4 15-minute workouts a week. That's what we'll do. And I think that people get stuck in those sort of, you know, it's the same as the food rules, but applied to movement instead, right? So I don't know, I guess we like to come up with rules to create order or whatever. And I think creating those kind of rules around movement, it really becomes discouraging. So then instead of like, you know, saying to yourself, all right, well, I have 15 minutes that I can move tonight. I don't really feel like putting on my sports bra, so maybe I can do some gentle yoga for 15 minutes before I go to bed. Instead of doing that, then you do nothing, you know, which obviously there's no benefit to that. But it's like, if I can't commit to like a whole hour hit workout or something, that I might as well do nothing.
Yeah, we fall into the all or nothing traps, right? And
it sets
up to fail because we're not perfect and we can't do all the perfect things. And actually there's no perfect things in terms of movement. But like hearing you talk about, you know, there's no like one type of movement, or that, you know, it doesn't need to be an hour, doesn't need to be this way. I can hear like listeners being like, okay, so what counts? So like what counts as movement? Like how would you respond to that? Like, okay, well, if it doesn't need to be this way, like what would count that makes it okay for me to move?
So in general, you think about exercise in terms of kind of three general categories, right? So there's cardiorespiratory exercise. So anything that kind of gets your heart and your breathing rate up, strength or resistance training. So anything that uses some type of resistance to try to strengthen your body, and then like mobility and flexibility, which are slightly different, but similar enough that I'll put them together. And ideally, like in terms of longevity and just general well-being, you want to do some of all three. And there's tons of things that you can do that will work out any of those, or maybe some combination, right? So if you super love dancing, dancing totally is cardio. And like, it doesn't need to be, you know, it could be very loose and informal, like dance party with the kids in the living room, or, you know, maybe you love going to like salsa class on Tuesdays at the local Latin dance studio. I don't know. Or just catching like a, you know, random dance class at a online, or, you know, what have you. So I think there's a ton of different ways. And the other, you know, I think that for some people, not me, because I still don't love these kinds of sports, but like organized sports, you know, I see some folks joining like adult kind of recreational, like volleyball or soccer or whatever leagues. And that's a great way to like socialize, hang out with some people, do something enjoyable for yourself, and get in some movement. So it doesn't necessarily need to be like HIIT class at the gym. Although if you love HIIT class at the gym, do HIIT class at the gym. No shade on that. But just that's not like the only way to move. Running is not the only way to do cardio. There's tons of ways. And that's where I think, you know, like in intuitive eating, we work on trying to experiment with trying new foods. I like to get people to work on trying to try some different types of movement. So, you know, maybe walking with the kids or the dog is the best thing for you. I also, you know, I think that if like your only form of movement comes from like gardening or some type of housework, I think that it is good to also get some other type of training in, just to balance out some muscle imbalances that can develop from like that kind of repetitive movement. But stuff like that counts too. Like if you're, you know, an avid gardener, like that's activity. You don't need to like I said, I still think that there's benefit to doing some intentional strength training, just because in a lot of activities like that, you're doing very similar movements over and over. And anytime you're doing like the same movement pattern over and over again, there's the potential for, imbalances or like overuse injuries. And a little bit of strength training can go a long way to preventing that kind of thing.
Yeah, I love that. It's like a lot about removing, like redefining what exercise is, and even maybe not calling it exercise, but movement, like ways that we move our body. And I like how you separate into like there's things that kind of like work our heart, right? To be able to like bring up our heart rate and things for like our muscles and things like that that have different benefits, and then like flexibility and mobility and things that keep us moving well. Like I like the way that we separate it, but redefining that it does not need to look one way and that it can change every day too. Like if today's gardening, that's fine. If tomorrow's a walk, that's cool. And then just kind of like allowing it to flow a little bit more. And I love this like idea of like tasting, like trying different things, right? Because I think for a lot of listeners, when our relationship to movement has been painful, has been damaged, has been not ideal, it can feel really scary to go back to movement. It can feel, yeah, like a huge barrier to go back. But when we have this idea of like tasting and trying to do things and think how it feels in our body when we do different movements, how we feel after, and really connecting to ourselves through movement, I think it can be so healing.
I've worked with a couple of different clients who have who are in recovery from either eating like actually diagnosed eating disorders or from like kind of subclinical disordered eating. And it does sometimes take some time to be able to like to be able to even return to movement. And I love the word you use, like tasting, because like that's exactly like try some different things, like and see what you like. Eventually, like kind of what I found, at least for right now, like I'm not really loving running. I mean, it also it's July and it's a kabillion degrees outside where I am, but it's not really a kabillion degrees. It's just a kabillion percent humidity and it feels terrible. But I haven't really been loving running, and so I haven't been doing it, and that's okay. Like your preferred type of movement is allowed to change. You're allowed to change it up
I love that.
and experiment with different things, you know?
No, that's really awesome. And I'll just add here, with working with people with eating disorders, it's also okay that sometimes we need to disengage and stop. Like movement, part of the healing relationship that's a little bit different with movement than is exercise, is that sometimes you do need to disengage from it for a period being, especially when there's a lot of red flags that comes up. And with eating disorder recovery, that can be a big one where if your body is not getting the nourishment that it needs, moving may not be ideal. So if you're listening to this and in recovery, it's okay if movement is on the back burner because it needs to be for a while, and then eventually we reconnect to it. Now, in terms of like movement in itself, we talked a little bit about why people tend to exercise and this idea of weight loss and things like that. What would you say is the harm of using movement as a way to control our body and how it looks? I can think about some of my clients are like, yeah, but I love the look of muscles on my body. I love the look of like being toned. What's the harm of like using movement as a way to control in that sense?
So I think it's just very easy to kind of slide into a disordered relationship to movement and to sort of slip into kind of punishing your body with exercise. And, you want to be able to kind of pay attention to how the movement feels in your body. Like, does this feel good? If it feels uncomfortable, is it just, an uncomfortable, like I am working kind of sensation? Or is this painful and I need to stop because there's something about this movement that's not working for my body? And I think that when we start to get really fixated on using the movement to try to change the appearance of our body, that it disconnects us from kind of that ability to be connected. And I also think that it really sets people up for disappointment, because, I mean, we all know you can't like spot reduce, right? Like you can do a million sit-ups, but that's not going to like make the fat just melt off of your belly. Like it doesn't work like that. And I think that everybody knows that, at least like intellectually, I hope that they've heard that. Although I was just talking to a client whose doctor suggested doing core work to lose belly fat. And it was like, seriously, like a doctor? So I think that most of us are aware that that's not how it works, but I think that you still can kind of slip into that trap, and it really probably is going to set you up to be disappointed. I will let you know, no number of sit-ups is going to magically melt the fat off of your stomach. It just doesn't work like that. So I think it facilitates a much healthier relationship with movement to focus on the other benefits and to kind of push the aesthetic stuff aside.
Yeah, I agree with everything that you said. Like it makes tons of sense, right? That when the focus is again a way to control your body, that it can definitely lead to just disordered thought patterns around food, around body, around movement. Like it's such an easy slope that we can go down, like a slippery slope to just have disordered eating, disordered movement, all of that stuff as well. And then just bring in the intention to other things, right? Because you can, I think, you know, part of it being like, if I've been working out my shoulders and my shoulders look more muscular, there can be a part of you that's like, oh, I like the fact that it looks muscular. And we need to add that with something else. Just focusing on that physical piece of it is dangerous. And also, I think it's the part that our bodies will change. So you can work out today and do all these things and our body will age. It will change. We won't be able to retain muscle mass the same way. And there's also this idea that every body is different, right? So I'll take an example for me and my partner. Our bodies are so different in terms of how we put on muscle and how we retain muscle, how we gain weight, how we like lose weight. Like it's just so, so different. So if you have this idea, and I think it's a lot of it comes in the comparison game of, I'm going to do this exercise to have this physique and tone. Well, your body may not react that way. You may not be able to do that. For some people, it's extremely hard to put on muscle mass.
Right.
For some people, it's a lot easier. But it's again this idea that we set these expectations of, I will do this to reach this external goal, that is going to leave us just feeling kind of meh.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think that trying to like find the joy and the fun in it, and to me, that doesn't necessarily mean that every single workout is like the funnest thing I've ever done. But it doesn't need to feel like a punishment, and it doesn't need to feel like I'm earning my food. And, you know, I have workouts, you know, with my friends at the gym or whatever, that like, that it is super fun. It's fun to just go and hang out. And then, you know, in between I do some workouts by myself that are, you know, more strength focused. And sometimes I rope one of my kids into hanging out with me. And that's always fun, trying to get them fired up about it. And it just doesn't always need to kind of take the form of, you know, like a class at the gym or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think that experimenting with different things to see what feels good, what you like, is a really helpful way to try to restore a better relationship with movement. And there's so much different stuff out there now, you know, there's so many different kinds of classes and like types of workouts and, you know, trainers who do all different kinds of things. Like if you try something and you like super hate it, like try something else. There's lots of stuff.
Yeah. And what do you find are like the common barriers for people to enjoy exercise? Maybe people who have been using exercise in a not great way to try to control. And now they're trying to get back to exercise, but not very much so enjoying it. Like, what are those common barriers that you see?
So what I will see a lot of is, I think the thing that I most commonly see is people who have some type of health or injury history that makes returning to a consistent movement routine difficult. So if that sounds like you, I will say you generally want to start with a visit to your doctor. Make sure you're like clear to exercise, make sure that there's not any specific restrictions. Sometimes if there's like sort of specific joint or mobility issues, it might be worth seeing a specialist, maybe even like a physical therapist to see if there's, you know, maybe you need to do a little bit of pre-work to be able to get to a point where you can engage in the kind of movement that you might like. Another thing that I will sometimes see is people who enjoyed a certain type of movement at one point in time and then can't really do that specific thing anymore for some reason. You know, maybe there's just a lot of disordered behaviors connected to that specific type of movement, and so they can't go back to that thing because of the disordered behaviors, or sometimes it's, you know, an injury, or, you know, like a former volleyball player who has a shoulder injury that like volleyball's out of the question. We can do other things, but we can't do volleyball. And if you're a person who, I don't, volleyball sounds like no fun at all to me, but if you're a person who is like, I super love volleyball and that's my whole life, it's really hard to then be like, I need to do something else that's not that. And again, I think that experimenting, trying things out with an open mind is really useful in that type of scenario. And then, you know, I think another thing that is always a struggle for people is kind of the consistency. So, you know, and a lot of times when you first try out a new movement routine, you're going to have like some muscle soreness later. And that can be sort of a disincentive for people, especially if you're a person who already has some type of physical pain anyway. To do exercise that then increases your physical pain can feel very like, why am I doing this? I don't want to do this. And my recommendation with that, like what I'll usually do with my clients, is if you do workouts where it's more of a full body and we're doing a little bit of work on a bunch of different body parts, rather than doing like, you know, sort of a leg day, shoulder day, back day, like that type of structure. Those full body workouts kind of spread out through the week can decrease the amount of muscle soreness that you have. So instead of being super sore in only your legs and you can't walk or sit down for 2 days, you're just a tiny bit sore more all over. Mm-hmm. Which, yeah, may or may not actually sound better now that I'm saying it out loud, but you know, it's a way to kind of help ease into it without like a ton of pain.
Yeah. So it sounds like it's just kind of like identifying your barriers. So if you're someone who wants to return to exercise and you're finding it really hard, maybe identifying like what comes up for you in that moment. Is it the body soreness? Is it the fact that like maybe there is a sport you love that you can't do anymore? For some people, I have a lot of experience is that people maybe live in a different body than when they used to exercise. Maybe,
yes,
maybe, you know, with the pandemic, a lot of us like have not worked out in a year. And then it's like the fear of going back to a gym in a bigger body, or all of those types of things that can come up too. So kind of like leaning into that as well of, one, letting go of expectations that our body a year ago can do the same thing as it does today. Like, we lose muscle mass in a year. That's normal. We lose some of like ability to do it, and we get to regain it and refocus and start like always meet yourself where you're at. And this happens if, you know, we haven't exercised in a year, but also day to day. Like, you may have some days where your body just feels not as great and you can't push as much and you can't do the same things. And we're just learning to be gentle with ourselves.
Yeah. Right? I love that you brought that up, because that is definitely a thing that I encounter in some of the folks that I work with, like the just struggling to kind of accept the changes that have happened in their own bodies, and that feeling of frustration that, like, I used to be able to do XYZ and now I can't do XYZ, and comparing like today self to, you know, whatever past version of self. And, you know, I realized that it's a lot easier to say than to actually put into practice, but I think it's important to just try and approach it with an open mind and to kind of accept the self that is here today, rather than kind of obsessing about like the past version, you know, whatever that past version might be. And, you know, maybe it's something that like we can work back towards, or maybe, you know, maybe there are aspects of that past version that were pretty unhealthy, and maybe that's not actually something that we want to work back towards, you know?
Yeah. And I like that. Like, it's definitely easier said than done, but not comparing ourselves to our past self, because it literally has no purpose. It'd be like myself here and now, like, what can I do for me here? Which can be hard. And with someone who maybe lives in a larger body too, like if there's any shame around like not being able to do certain movements, something that I like and like I work with clients too is around like, let's personalize it for your body. And this happens if you live in a larger body, but it can happen at any body sizes, that your body doesn't want to do something that maybe you used to be able to do, or just that feels uncomfortable to you. And then we learn to personalize, like, for me, this feels better, or that feels better. And that, and the same thing if you would have an injury. So it's like learning to reconnect with our body. And I think this is where there's like a lot of power in movement, because we can be so mindful and intentional in how we move and how it connects to ourselves and our body, that it can be such a healing piece as well.
Yeah.
And I wanted to say something that you said around, like, if there was like a sport that you used to do that you can't do anymore, because I can relate to that. Like, I used to love to run, and like my hips do not handle running anymore. But I think pieces of this is really breaking down, like, what was it about that sport that you loved? Right? Because for some things it can be like, I love the fact that I felt free. I love the fact that I feel strong, empowered, or I was with people, if it's like with the volleyball or whatever it is, and seeing how we can recreate that in a new sport. And I think this brings back the idea of like, we don't move just for one reason. There's so many reasons why, and bring the intentionality of like, if what I love was to connect with people when I moved, cool. How can I do this in a different way that feels good for my body here and now? So kind of bringing all those pieces together.
Yeah, I love that. Like, trying to think about, you know, what was it that you liked about that sport, and let's think about some other ways that we can get that. Like, for me, I told you I've like pretty much shifted away from running, and I've been doing like some powerlifting and a little bit of strongman stuff. And I still am like training to an event and get that like sense of, you know, I trained up to my event. I do my event and get that like kind of sense of accomplishment, but it's a very different sport. And so I think it has been a way to kind of retain some of the things that I liked, and but also to shift away from some of the disordered habits that I had developed around running.
Yeah, 100%. And then the last question that I have for you, a lot of people, when we like exit diet culture, in terms of our relationship with food and body, sometimes with exercise is going to be the same thing, right? A lot of stuff that was like really rigid of like how much intensity and all the things and training plans and all these things are things that we move away from during this period, right? So to allow movement to be a little bit more joyful and intentional. That being said, some of us are still very competitive. So I guess my question for you would be like, could you still have like fitness goals and training goals outside of diet culture? And how do you do that? Like, how are you able to train in a way that kind of meets that need without being like all or nothing and icky from like diet culture stuff.
So is it possible? Hell yes. Hell yes, it is possible. Absolutely, emphatically, yes. For me, I told you like powerlifting and I've been dabbling a little bit in strongman stuff. You know, I can compete like with myself on, you know, trying to improve my numbers with a specific thing. I have clients where sometimes we'll work on progressing like one specific movement or, you know, and sometimes, you know, they can be big, crazy goals. So, you know, I've got a client who's working on building back her, like her back squat and trying to increase weight there. I have some other folks where like we're working on being able to like smoothly get up from the floor, right? So it doesn't have to be like super crazy goals. They can be, you know, smaller. And I mean, I guess the sort of smaller isn't even quite the right word for it because, you know, getting up and down off the floor is a pretty damn big deal. But you know, it doesn't have to be like these ultra competitive things if that's not your jam. But if it is your jam, it's definitely possible to still work on those types of goals. So,
I love that. You can still have goals outside of diet culture. I think that's something that scares people about like leaving diet culture. Like, but will I like still do all the things and like be able to do that? And like, yes, you can still do that. It's just not coming from a place of shaming yourself into doing it.
Yes, I mean, you can set like consistency goals about working out a certain number of times a week. You can set like duration goals. Like, you know, maybe I can currently hike for a half an hour and I would like to be able to work my way up to hiking for an hour. There's all different types of goals that you can set. And, you know, and maybe they're super hardcore competitive goals, or maybe they're like lifestyle goals. Maybe it's a goal like, you know, I want to be able to carry my kids around without getting tired, you know?
Yeah, I love that. All right. Thank you so much for today. I really enjoyed having you on the podcast and just talking about these things that are so very important. How can people find you, work with you, learn more about you? Tell us where we can stalk you.
So I am on Instagram and on Facebook, both at EnlightenWell. It's EnlightenWell. My web address is EnlightenWellLLC.com. So it's like four L's in a row there. A little weird. Not sure I thought that out the best when I set it up. And yeah, I mean, my email and everything is like on my website. So easy enough to find me.
Wonderful. So everything will be linked in show notes. So you guys can just go click super easy and go find her.
Very cool.
Yeah. Awesome. So let's finish up with our fun questions of debate.
Yes.
So the first one is, what is your favorite food?
So definitely buffalo chicken, like almost anything. Probably like buffalo chicken, either wraps or salads, but I'm also a huge fan of like boneless wings, like, you know, proper bone in wings. No ranch dressing though. I only want blue cheese.
Oh no. Are you lost at blue cheese?
Oh man.
The whole time I'm like, yes, yes, yes. And then
I saw your face. It was like, mm.
I'm not going to yuck your yum. So yay for you and blue cheese. All right. If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
Probably flying or maybe teleporting. Hmm. Can I get like teleporting and time travel combined? Although I don't know, time travel seems like it has the potential to be very hazardous. Yeah.
I feel like that's the wish of like, my superpower would be having access to all superpowers.
all at once.
Yep. Okay. I love that. What is your favorite way to self-care?
So, probably sleep.
Ooh, yes. So underrated. So wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, we love it. Awesome. Perfect. And last question for you, what does balance mean to you?
So I guess I think in terms of movement, obviously, and, you know, I want to see movement that incorporates some of kind of those three aspects that we talked about, some cardio, some strength, and some either flexibility or mobility. But I also want it to be something that enriches your life, not kind of takes it over or like sort of runs your life. Like your movement routine should enhance your life and the other things that you're doing. I mean, unless you're like a pro athlete, then I guess maybe it is your life. But for most of the rest of us, this should be an enhancement, not like my entire life.
I love that so much. It's something that should be life enhancing and not like dominating.
Yes.
Love it so much. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here today. I'm really happy we got to connect and I got to meet you.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. It was great to hang out and to chat with you.
Wasn't this episode just wonderful? It is so great when we're starting to have this conversation about movement in such a way that is a lot more positive, a lot more uplifting, and not as like shaming and like, you know, using your motivation and willpower and discipline to move your body. It just sounds so much lighter and nice and a way to connect. So I just wanted to say again that if your relationship to movement is not where you want it to be, maybe it's still very much triggering, that it is okay to disengage. It's okay if you need a break. It's okay if movement is not currently part of your life as you are going through this healing process. There are often so many different red flags in terms of exercises that we are still using it as a way to compensate or earn or control. And when this happens, this is where we may want to take a break. And if you're in that space, there is no shame in being there. It's totally okay knowing that, you know, we'll make back our way to movement. We just need to make sure that movement is something that we actually truly enjoy. And again, not a way that we're shaming ourselves into doing all the things. So on that note, my friend, I hope that you enjoyed this episode. If you are interested in learning more about healing your relationship to food and to your body, check out the online program. We are relaunching the program this August, so check out the website for more information. This is for women who are, you know, not wanting to restrict anymore, who are tired of thinking about food and their body all the time. Like it takes a lot of bandwidth, right, to think about food and body, and are ready to eat without guilt, learn to nourish their body, reconnect to their body, and just take care of themselves in a different way. So if this sounds like you, go check out the program on the website at www.thebalancepractice.com/program, and you can apply to join our new August cohort. On that note, my friends, I hope you have a great day, and I'll catch you in the next episode.